71 and 72, Senate Committee on Revenue and School Finance, Agenda, April 8, 1981, Hearing Room 137, 1:30 p.m. Congressman Jim Weaver's testimony on Senate Bill 391, Change Federal Forest Reserve Distribution. Work session, Senate Bill 348, 1970, Census Used in County Federal Forest Reserve Fund. Senate Bill 68, Creates Lien by Warrant for Unpaid Timber Tax. Senate Bill 398, Exemption of Farm Tools.
Okay, the committee will come to order. We have first on our agenda, the Honorable Congressman Jim Weaver from the 4th Congressional District, State of Oregon, to testify on Senate Bill 391 and to introduce him as a sponsor of that legislation, Senator Feidling.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, we appreciate Representative Hendrickson and I your accommodation of the congressman while he is in the state for this hearing. We understand that the full hearing will come at a later time when the bill is more nearly ripe. I appreciate the courtesy shown to us in asking us to be here, and we would introduce the congressman from the 4th District, James Weaver, for this limited hearing. We'll be back another day. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's especially a pleasure because he's a constituent.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Watch out.
Congressman Weaver.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I wanted to say how much I appreciated the opportunity to appear before you today. I really, truly thank you very much, John. It was very good of you and members. I deeply believe in the legislation that you have before you, Senator Feidling and Representative Hendrickson's legislation. I've introduced similar legislation in the United States Congress. 3 or 4 years ago, at a time when road funds in my congressional district were ample, as a matter of fact, the counties weren't even having to go out and ask for additional funds. There were no actual levies against property for roads in many counties. Two school districts were closed, actually closed, students at home, because the budgets had not been approved. It was not funds to run these schools. And I said to myself, something's awfully, awfully wrong here. And so I went to the fact that generally, property tax levies roughly have 75% of their amounts going to schools. If you take the general levy within a county, roughly 75% will go to schools. 25% will go to the other uses or other services performed by the county and service districts. And as chairman of the Forest Committee of the United States House of Representatives, and therefore having within my jurisdiction matters pertaining to the receipts of the Forest Service timber sales, and seeing that those receipts which were given to the local governments went not 75% for schools, as the property taxes did, and the Forest Service receipts are in lieu of property taxes. That's in effect what they are. They're in lieu of property taxes. And if they were given as property taxes, 75% of them would go to schools, or whatever happened to be the ratio in that given county. But instead, under Oregon law, 75% went to roads. And when you think that many people in your legislative districts work in factories, and they have kids going to schools, but the factory pays property taxes. There are many people, thousands of them, working in those national forests who have kids going to school, and that forest is actually a factory. But the property taxes given by that forest go 75% to roads. Well, the upshot of this is that the schools must go out every year after year to get their budgets approved, fight like the devil. Well, the monies to go, which go to roads, we don't even levy property taxes. Now, this has two implications. One, the schools, of course, in those counties where there's heavy Forest Service receipts, where, in other words, there are large factories, the forests, not paying their share of school property taxes, but also it's an inefficiency in government. Now, you have to understand that if you give anybody money in rather unlimited amounts, they're not going to use it wisely. This is just a precept, a truism. And so in the road division, we don't have that check of the people having, of the roads having to test whether their services are being adequately performed or extravagant or whatever, checked by the voters. Because the Forest Service receipts just simply go in the tune of $75 million in those counties. The largest construction company in Oregon is the Douglas County Road Department. And this is the reason. So I said, when those two school districts were closed, my congressional district, I said, something has to be done. So I talked with legislators in that legislative session. We held a hearing, but we didn't get very far. And now I am in great earnest that we do something to right this terrible imbalance of the schools, in effect, in counties with heavy Forest Service national forests, not getting their share of that property taxes, therefore being squeezed ever more. We right that balance and at least go partway to what the normal property tax would be on national forests if they were privately owned. Now, I've introduced this legislation to Congress. The federal legislation now simply says federal Forest Service receipts go to schools and roads. I've introduced legislation Congress mandates 50% of them go to schools, and the rest is optional to the county. Now, the counties like that. Some counties don't want to spend all that money or a lot of money on roads. They would like the option of spending it on other services, which is all law enforcement or rescue efforts in the national forest, things like this. And so the counties like that. At the same time, almost every state in the union having Forest Service receipts gives 50% or more to the schools. Oregon stands almost alone. Only, really, Montana and Idaho give more to roads than they do to schools. In other words, all other 37 states that get Forest Service receipts give 50% or more to schools. California and Washington, our neighbors to the north and south, give more than 50% or more to the schools of these Forest Service receipts. And so members of my subcommittee, of course, are very sympathetic to this because their states already do this. However, because most of the states already give 50% or more to the schools, it could well be that the problem could be best resolved by the Oregon legislature, and that's why I appear before you today. It could well be Idaho has a special problem. They passed a 1% property tax limitation. It's really bound them, and it takes a two-thirds vote to increase any particular funding. That's really tough. And because they don't levy for roads in Idaho because of the Forest Service receipts, they've got a special problem that I'm going to have to take care of in federal legislation. So I thought it might be simpler and more direct if the Oregon legislature actually amended its law, all longstanding, back in days gone by when it was difficult to get the roads up into the timber. You understand, that's why you have this law in the books. Now we have appropriated funds in the forests, in the national forest, building those roads. We have timber purchaser funds. These amount to almost $300 million in any given year, in the nation to build these roads. So we don't have that problem anymore of simply no funds being generated to build the roads to get near and into our timber. That problem's gone, and the reason for this law in the Oregon statute books is therefore gone with it. And so therefore, I ask that and very strongly hope that you would act favorably on the legislation that would give you that would go more for the schools, 50% for schools. The schools badly need it. We all know that. The budgets are being cut everywhere by the federal and state governments, and they're hurting education in particular. The Reagan administration has proposed cuts to elementary and secondary by $3.7 billion for fiscal 82 authority and $2.4 billion for fiscal 82 actual appropriational outlays. These are horrendous cuts, and they're going to affect us all. And so this bill that we have before us would give, in those counties where there is Forest Service receipts, $25 million more a year. That's a sizable amount of money. It would help our school. Let me close by saying, giving you one point, and that is most of the counties, if not all, that now receive Forest Service receipts also have BLM-managed lands, the so-called O&C lands, and they also provide around $100 million a year to these counties. And they can spend those monies on anything they want, including roads. And we're not touching that. The counties are going to have those funds solely to themselves to do anything they want with, including roads. And so, therefore, they're not going to be hurt at all. On the contrary, they're going to have plenty of money from timber sale receipts, federal timber sale receipts. I'm not going to touch the O&C, or try to in any way, shape, or form in Congress. All we're talking about here is the national forest receipts. And so I think it's only fair, it's only equitable, that the schools be given this fairer share for all the reasons that I've mentioned. I'd be delighted, Mr. Chairman, if there are any questions.
Senator Dane. I'm curious, on these forest receipts, if it makes sense to reapportion this for schools, why wouldn't it make sense to reapportion the O&C funds for the same purpose?
Why not?
Why not equal treatment? We believe strong enough, but there's been a lot of controversy, as you know, the way we have to write our and have developed our basic school support formula is always there's been the object of O&C counties and how the effect my county receives O&C funds. But I guess what I'm saying, if it makes logic in two respects to, or in that one respect, why not both?
Senator Day, I appreciate those remarks very much. Sounds to me like you're going to be heartily in support of the of this bill. If you want to
well,
go
I will
on.
If you believe in equal treatment.
No, I mean, if you want to go on and do it with BLM, then obviously you take half a loaf. I, as a politician, have had to take lots of half loaves in my...
I guess if we follow your logic, truly, Congressman Weaver, and we just lay it flat out, if that makes sense for the forestry, why not the O&C one?
Well, you see, you cannot... legislature... may, in its wisdom, act on the O&C funds as it wishes.
How do you feel about that?
How do I feel about it? As representative of the 4th Congressional District of the United States Congress, I will not bring a bill to the floor dealing with the O&C funds.
I guess what I'm saying, if we were...
I do not want any amendments. See, I have no problem with the Forest Service. I can bring that bill to the floor because it affects all the states almost in the nation. O&C
I guess
affects
what
only
I was,
one.
I understand that, but if we felt strongly enough distributing forest receipts, that it should they should be more, better redirected towards the schools, I guess if we follow the logic that you're making on this, would it be exceptional to go on that? After Senator Failey gives you your answer on this.
I missed your last remark.
Oh, I know you did. Senator Failey, I just wondered what he told you to say, but I'd be interested. I guess my only point is that from a logical standpoint, forgetting the politics of it, but if we were going to really determine logic based on why you're supporting this bill, we could make a good point that to support schools that forest receipts, whether it be from O&C or what have you. Is that not true?
Senator Day, if that's what you wish.
Well, I just wondered how you felt.
How I feel? I can tell you that it would not be wise or prudent for an Oregon congressman to to bring an ONC bill to the floor of the House of Representatives.
All right.
I don't think you'd want me to, but it would have no harm or effect to do it in the floor of the Oregon House of Representatives or the Oregon Senate. So, as I say, in your wisdom, if you'd wish to do that, that certainly would be your prerogative.
Finish that. Let's get on to some others. Let me ask you, we have some counties who have received ONC funds. It isn't a major portion like it is in Lane or Douglas or Jefferson or some of the Jackson County. There are some I can think of. Washington County gets a portion of ONC funds, so does Marion County.
18 counties, Senator.
Marion and Washington, it isn't. It's a sizable sum, but it isn't a total. Those counties, when it has to do with roads like Washington County, if you've read the newspapers, I'm sure you have, we've got a road system there that we're probably going to be in horse and buggy if we don't do something. And the revenues from the gas tax, because of the price increase and conservation and a lot of other reasons, the consumption of gas in this town. And, of course, our road fund is in a world of hurt. And I guess my question to you is, do you see in the future where we can start to see more money from the gas tax being distributed on a way where secondary roads get equal treatment that we've seen on construction of freeways or major arterials and so forth? What do you see happening in Congress along that line? Because Washington County, or my own county, Marion County, right now, I'm going to tell you something. We are almost ready to come back and get that printing press you guys have been using for so long, because we've been in a world of hurt. And my problem is our secondary roads are indeed in a great deal of jeopardy. And, of course, a lot of these funds help and assist in that in counties where ONC funds aren't the primary ends, but it could be a major change and even further depleting our secondary road treatment. I just wonder how you would address that type of thing.
Senator Day, I strongly support the position you take that we emphasize secondary roads and primary roads and get away from the construction of new freeways. I don't think there's any question about that.
Is there any hope for that this session?
The Congress is going to have a bill. I spoke to the chairman of the Public Works Committee just last week about it. As you know, the subcommittee dealing with that has been stacked in the past years by the huge interstate interests, and it's been very difficult to move money out of that into mass transit and into the primary and secondary. Former Congressman Bob Duncan and I worked very hard to try to move that. There was some small movement. We hope to get some more movement. Very badly, because that's where the money's needed. No question about it. We'll continue that fight, I can assure you.
One other question, Mr. Chairman, will be done. One of the things that I did a survey in the early 70s when I worked for the Department of Interior on particularly the harvesting of timber, particularly on federal lands, and I know you've been interested in this, but I'd like to hear your view and what's going on. Where we insist when timber is cut, get these forests back and reforest, where part of that cutting contract is going to require replanting of those federal forests. And I think at that time I had, in federal and state lands, we had something like 6 million acres. What are we doing to get that land back in production? I realize this isn't directly related, but I know last session you took some action in that area, but what's going to happen this session?
Well, no, I'd be pleased to, if the chairman would allow me the time to answer your question. The Forest Management Act of 1976 required that all backlog in national forests and tree planting be caught up by 1985. And I was instrumental in putting that clause in that act, and the Forest Service has informed me that they will meet that goal and that they are very close to being caught up now. There are certain areas that trees just don't grow, and we must be thinking about that. These trees don't come back as they should. But in terms of their tree planting, they're going to achieve that goal. They do this both from funds called Knutson-Vandenberg that are taken from the purchaser payments, as well as appropriated funds for reforestation. And I'd like to point out, because we're talking about in lieu of property taxes from national forests, that in the 1976 Forest Management Act, I put in an amendment. So I think I have every right to come here and ask you to give more money for schools, and I'll tell you why. I put an amendment in that act that gave the counties and the states 25% of the timber purchaser roads funds, which we'd never gotten before, and the Knutson-Vandenberg funds, which we're talking about for reforestation, although it didn't take it away from either the tree planting or the roads. We just got that amount. And that has amounted to around $20 million a year more for Oregon, because I put that amendment in. So I think that when I ask for $25 million for schools, that I've done my share of making that up for the other uses that those funds go to.
Jim, do you see them as a Forest Service bids their contracts, or BLM is somewhat different, but particularly the Forest Service, do you see where they start to develop a policy that timber is bid on? That part of that bid requires them to reinforce as part of the bid. So do you see that occurring?
Well, what they do now is put in to what's called the Knutson-Vandenberg Fund. The Forest Service prefers not to have that happen. I've discussed it with them many times and had hearings on it. They prefer to be in charge of it themselves. Now, the purchaser has certain duties of leaving his plot in a certain shape and form, and I think that's probably best to keep the Forest Service in charge.
I don't have any further questions, but I just want to say, Mr. Chairman, it's a real pleasure to be on the other end, because I've been before the congressman. He's always treated me with the utmost courtesy, but it's fun to work you over a little bit. I appreciate it.
LB, thank you.
Are there other questions? Congressman, then the status of the federal legislation is that you're having some trouble with Idaho and their provision of their state law. And if Oregon passes this provision, you tended to indicate that you would probably drop your efforts at the federal level.
No, I probably will pass a bill, and I have support for passage of a bill. There's no question about it. I've got the administration's, I should have told you this, and forgive me, Mr. Chairman, but I have the administration's support. I have my committee's support. I've just got a couple of problems with my bill.
Do you have Hague's support?
Excuse me?
Do you have Hague's support?
He's in charge, though.
How about Jimmy Carter?
He got Hague in his face, I think.
I just wondered, is Jimmy Carter you will go ahead.
I still intend to pass legislation in this area, yes, but it may be broader and do different things. I would say that it's very important from my position, what I'm trying to do here, and I hope the committee does, to pass the Oregon legislation. Very important.
We have not held, as you're aware, hearings on this legislation, so our research is probably limited compared to yours. Of the counties affected, how many, to your knowledge, have road surpluses, that is, road fund surpluses? Do you have any information in that area?
Yes, I'll be glad to furnish the exact details to you. There are several counties with that, and these counties, of course, would actually like to. One of the things I'll be doing is actually giving the counties the authority to use it for other purposes other than schools and roads, other than roads, because they want that. And there are surpluses, and I'll furnish that to the committee if I may, the exact details, because I do have that.
The question being, for those who are in a more of a deficit situation, Washington County perhaps being one, it creates then basically a shift in the property tax from the schools trying to raise those dollars to the county then trying to raise those dollars, unless they can use some other source in those situations.
Well, as I say, it's only fair that the schools who have to go out for $22 a thousand and the counties who have to go out for either nothing or maybe $1 or maybe 20 cents a thousand, that's just not fair. Take a little pressure off the schools and having to go out every year and let the voters test whether they want to buy any more schools or roads or whatever. Let the voters decide these things. That's what I say.
Leave to Washington County, we're going to be walking. There won't be any roads left.
Well, that's what the people want.
I guess you're right.
Okay, other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask, I know you're going to hear this later, but it would be very helpful from the staff. If they could prepare an impact of a loss of revenue county by county that receives this, And I'd also like him to compare, if we were to do this same approach on O&C funds, I'd like to see both impacts.
Right. I hear what you're saying.
I think all we'll have to do is call certain organizations.
They probably have that material.
But I think it'd be interesting to see how it is. I appreciate what Congressman Weaver is saying. And so we have the courage to encourage Jeff. He doesn't. I understand that.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Trope.
I'm wondering if, about the ownership of the O&C lands and whether or not we have any direct authority over it.
Yeah, we could have done it 12 years ago on distribution there if we wanted to, but there's some political problems.
Why can't you? I don't know. It seems to me what Senator Fadley was saying, that there is a distinction that the O&C lands technically belong to the counties. That's what Senator Fadley was saying. Maybe he's wrong.
I know this, that we had a bill in 1969 where we addressed just that question, and we do have the authority. It can be done, but point is, I just like to look at the basic policy question. I can assure you that we aren't going to bite it off. Let's not be under any illusions. Senator Powell, Governor's Rep. Mrs. Amadeo would like to say something if we could. Pat, would you like to offer something here?
Did you want to testify?
No, I wanted to talk to you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You guys go and get your signal straight.
I know.
One's a fastball, two's a curveball, a right. Slider.
You just leave General Haig alone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. On our agenda are three bills for work session. One is Senate Bill 348. That bill is the one Senator Ripper and the County Commissioner from Curry County brought to our attention last week, involving the four counties that currently... So we're going to do this tomorrow. Okay. This allows the four counties involved to split, make this split, notwithstanding the formula that the congressman just talked about. Now, the reason given, and I asked the question during the hearing for this bill, is again, these counties need to know, and the districts involved need to know soon as to whether or not this legislation will be continued. And what this does is it simply frees the population as of the 1970 census for qualifying and would keep Curry, Grant, Hood River, and Harney County under the provisions. Mr. Pinola, did you hear from Hood River? I'm sorry, I thought this was tomorrow that this was coming up.
Yes, I did discuss this with them just before the meeting. With the county administrator, for the record, Bill Penhollow, with the Association of Oregon Counties. It's a matter that they wanted to consider. Unfortunately, they don't have a board meeting again until, I believe, it's the 20th. They meet twice monthly, so it wouldn't be timely, I think, for this committee's consideration.
Okay, I think they can pick that up in the House.
If they desire some kind of a change.
Okay.
Just be sure I'll be watching it.
For Senator Jernstedt's benefit, I would mention that for purposes of this act and other forest matters, that Hood River County is in western Oregon, so they fall into that population category.
The I would follow your lead, Senator Jernstedt. The only thing, this is permissive, it is not a requirement. They have been covered heretofore, so under existing law they are under the Act, and these districts have requested that we take action as expeditiously as possible, and I told Mr. Pinhall that I would go to the House Committee if, in fact, Hood River wants out and recommend that and,
okay. Thank you.
And help with it.
Are you okay?
Yeah. Senator Hannon.
Mr. Chairman, you probably noted it, but 348, the same chapter as 391, and I'm just wondering if, after we have some subsequent hearings on 391, if it looks like that's going to fly, we could merely amend 391 with the new language 348 to save one bill. I'm not guessing what's going to happen to 391.
They may want to expedite this other, Charlie. That's the only thing you're
Is there a time element on?
I think they're anxious for
well,
it.
Well, in the budgeting process, they are anxious to know whether this is going to be continued, particularly in light of 391 of being around here. And so I do think that it's a system that has been established, they've been operating under for some time, and that to hold it up and as an amendment to 391, which may take a while.
That's a thought.
Senator Crow?
Yes. I wasn't here for the hearing, so I don't know the details. Is the change from latest to 1970 something that's going to be temporary and it's caused simply because of the information from this latest census? Is that
well, the population, of course, of each of the counties affected has grown substantially.
Right. Okay.
And because of that, they're no longer eligible under the law. So as opposed to a continuous program of trying to find figures that would just put these four counties into it, you would probably at this point have to go to a legal description of the county or something. Senator Ripper simply used this approach of saying for this purpose you will use 1970 census data, and so it freezes the counties involved. There is a dollar cap.
It's a dollar amount. Mm-hmm. Okay, but I'm thinking about the interest amount. We're going to let them negotiate it.
Mm-hmm. I don't think they can use it unless you do that. If you really
want
the truth, Cliff, with the up and down interest rates there are, I really don't see how. I think that if we don't do this, we shouldn't do anything with the bill, because with the money market the way it is, they're going to have to go and pay the going rate to get this done and say it's worth it, because there are certain key projects that are held up. I'm sure this is why it's a concern.
I think so too, except that if we say but not more than 12%,
and
draw interest at a negotiated rate but not more than 15% or something like that, that would certainly not allow them to negotiate any damn thing they wanted to. They might wait and get lower interest sometime they could afford it if they had some kind of cap.
I think the commission would weigh the short-term money cost versus the need for the project.
Or the gain for that project. It might be a grant that they'd have to come up with right now. Or they might
have a case right now.
$6 million.
We're trying to get these this bridge thing going.
Right.
We pretty well got it going. They were successful in getting some reserve funds temporarily, $1.5 million. Now, this to finish the condemnation proceedings and so forth, that startup is what will keep the whole flow process there in sync with the fiscal year October to October, because we're in a different fiscal year than they are. And I guess I'm saying if we do it, I think we ought to go their route or not at all, because I think if they have it, I don't think the highway or the transportation is going to go out and pay more than any. I mean, they're going to weigh those facts before they ever do this. Because
how about saying they draw interest at not a negotiated rate, but at what the market rate?
Well, then you almost announce that they have to accept the market rate, and you don't want to do that. I don't think
more than.
See, they may be asking, they may be negotiating with the state treasurer on some short-term funds that the treasurer could otherwise maybe investing. And if we put market in there, it's going to be confusing because the market rate for short-term funds would be different than long-term. So I think we have to be careful.
Okay, let's leave it alone.
You want to move this bill?
I think so.
Got any amendments to it?
I
move the bill. Will you pass recommendation?
Senator Day moves that the committee send Senate Bill 106 to the floor for due pass recommendation. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hanlon?
Aye.
Senator
Jernstedt? Aye.
Senator
McFarland?
Aye.
Senator McFarland?
Aye.
Senator
Well, thanks a lot.
Aye.
Senator
Day?
Aye.
Senator
Powell? Aye. Motion's adopted. There's one other bill on the agenda for work session. That's Senate Bill 398. That's where we're trying to clear up the statute on farm tools and equipment as far as being exempt. Jim, we're on. We have three sets of amendments. Farm Bureau forgot they were supposed to be here and are on their way and might not make it. So, why don't you tell us what happened in the
three sets of amendments?
Four, five, and six.
See, six. I give mine to John. Just
here. Here. Why don't you fill us in on the work in the progress?
It's your last. Jim Scherzinger for Legislative Revenue. The last meeting that you had on this, you sent a group of us away, with the mission of exempting that personal property that is generally being exempted anyway in most counties, but is theoretically subject to tax under the current statute that exempts farm machinery and equipment. And there were a series of meetings with Don Schellenberg from the Farm Bureau and Mike Dewey and Bob Fielder from the Department of Revenue, Walt Apley from the Department of Justice, Barbara Seymour from Legislative Council, and me. And I don't think we were ever all together at one time, but all those people were involved. And the product of that was the Dash 4, 398-4 amendments. And in effect, those amendments clearly exempt all the property of the farmer that is generally being exempted in most counties now. And so, for example, it says items of tangible personal property, including but not limited to tools, machinery, and equipment owned by or in the possession or under the control of the taxpayer, that are used by the taxpayer predominantly in the construction, reconstruction, maintenance, repair, support, or operation of farm machinery and equipment and other real and personal farm improvements. In other words, any of that personal property that's used to support farm machinery and equipment or other real farm improvements that are A, owned by or in the possession or control of the taxpayer. Now that gets to the comment of Senator Monroe, that we shouldn't be exempting personal property of manufacturers. In other words, the taxpayer has to be using it predominantly in the repair and maintenance of real and personal farm improvements, and has to be an owner in possession by that taxpayer. And then B, are used primarily in the animal husbandry, agriculture, or horticultural activities, or combination of animal husbandry, agriculture, or horticultural activities carried on by the taxpayer. Now, in addition to those amendments above there, after the words, if you look above the tools section, which is that subparagraph D, up in on line 8 in paragraph A, where it currently reads farm machinery and equipment used in the planting, raising, cultivating, or harvesting, now they've added the words or placing in storage of farm crops. Now there was a concern when you're dealing with a typical farm, apparently these four words here, planting, raising, cultivating, or harvesting, define what machinery and equipment is going to be exempt. When you get before planting, for example, preparing the field for, say, clearing it, some equipment there may not be exempt, particularly large equipment that's typically used in a forest-type activity, when you're actually clearing the trees off the land. That property may not be exempt, and that's the way the current statute reads, and it remains that way after this. And then at the other end, after the harvesting, you run into problems of defining exactly where harvesting ends and other types of activities begin. So a farmer might have storage facilities on the farm or cleaning facilities, like seed cleaning facilities, or an orchardist might have refrigeration equipment, all sorts of things that you have to sort of draw a line between harvesting and storage and then on to processing. And what typically is being done, apparently, is that harvesting is being taken to include up to the point that it's put into storage. So if you have equipment that is putting it into storage, they'll exempt that, even though the law doesn't say that. And but once it's in storage, if you have a lift truck inside a cleaning operation, just a typical forklift truck, that will be taxable inside your seat cleaning operation, your storage, or your is lifting them.
Well, you have, pardon me, Mr. Chairman, you have seat cleaning. Yeah, a lot of farmers do their old seat cleaning. A lot of them have nut dryers for filberts. A lot of them have orchardists that some do will store some of that product that is part of their harvest. I could understand that once it left there, if they start processing it, it could be a different story. But to have some storage, it'd be like a grain silo or anything else. Why would that be taxable? I just, you know, we go through this thing and it just, it's almost inevitable. The Revenue Department's got another hitch. I mean, I don't understand the rationale.
Okay. The rationale for this set of amendments is it fairly clearly does what's commonly being done, the common lines that they're drawing now. Now, in some counties where they've had the trouble that brought up this bill, they have tried to put on the rolls some things that aren't commonly on the rolls in other counties. And this would take care of that and make it clear that all those things that are commonly off the rolls are going to be off the rolls. Now, since then, apparently now there's, I've seen the dash 5 set of amendments. I haven't seen the dash 6.
Where does dash 5 come from?
My understanding is that Don Schellenberg of the Oregon Farm Bureau had...
Okay, well, back to dash 4. Did everybody agree on dash 4?
I think everybody agreed that dash 4 does exactly what I said it did.
Okay.
Well, I'm not sure that's what they want.
Okay. And now on dash 5, this is an amendment the Farm Bureau wanted in addition to dash 4.
That's my understanding.
Okay. Right. And how about, and you have not seen dash 6?
I haven't seen dash 6. I'm just looking at it now, I don't even see the difference.
Who's dash 6?
He wouldn't know if he hasn't seen it.
Somebody would know.
Well, Don, why don't you come on up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Can you look at these amendments?
What's the difference between these two?
I hadn't seen dash 6, but I expect in dash 5 it says except office equipment on line 5.
Yes.
Okay, it doesn't say that on in dash 6.
Oh, wait, no, yeah, you're right. Dash 6 includes office equipment.
I think that's the difference between the two. I worked with Barbara Seymour on this, and this was, at, if I may say so, sure. Senator Day, at the request of Senator Day, on this set of amendments. And Barbara and I talked about this, and we weren't sure what Senator Day's intentions were at that point. And I said, well, write it up both ways and see which way he would prefer. And apparently she wrote it up both ways and submitted it both ways. And I wasn't aware that was going to be the case.
Now, tell us what Dash 5 does.
Okay, what Dash 5 does would actually replace Dash 4. Dash 5 would simply exempt everything, all personal property on the farm, except for office equipment, which is what Senator Day has been referring to. He said, get one drawn up that way, and so working with Barbara, we drew up this wording that would replace dash 4.
Okay, that would include a forklift inside a cleaning warehouse?
I believe it would. it's on the farm, it's used...
And logging, clearing, and all that equipment?
If it's used predominantly in these areas. The case came up, or the point came up, and when I was discussing this with Mr. Fielder earlier, about the fellow who had what's called a skid loader. And Bob can correct me if I'm wrong when giving this illustration, but the way I understood it, it's a four-wheel drive tractor, but it has a boom out the back for pulling logs. Well, the fella, as I understood it, used it about 75% of the time on the farm pulling a disc, and the other 25% of the time he used it in his woodlot pulling logs. Well, it's not a piece of farm machinery, as it says in 398 on line 8, it says farm machinery. So it's not a piece of farm machinery, so they would not accept that as an exemption. Another fellow, a neighbor of mine, has a D8 cat. He has some land on his place that needs clearing. He uses that cat for packing the silage in his bunker silo. The local assessor would exempt the blade because it was used to push the stuff around, but not the cat because it was not a piece of farming machinery. It's too big to be a piece of farm equipment, as what Jim had alluded here to just recently.
Okay, and then dash 6 replaces 4 and 5.
Yeah, and would include office equipment.
Office equipment would be exempt.
Yeah, that I hadn't seen this, but I'm sure that's what the difference is there.
I'm not interested.
Mr. Chairman?
That's not...
Senator Hanlon?
5 is
fine. Senator Hanlon?
I hate to be heard suggesting a number 7.
Maybe you got a better idea. Let's hear it.
That if I were a hay producer, which I am, and I had some hay trucks to deliver that hay, which I don't, and I had some equipment to service those hay trucks, wouldn't be exempt under this bill.
Under
or
5?
I'm wrong, please.
Under 5?
Under anything.
I think under 5 it would.
Why wouldn't it? Are they exempt under current law?
No. We're talking about the equipment to service the trucks.
Oh.
But the point I'm making is this doesn't deal with equipment or tools used to service equipment for delivery of your product. That's the area.
If they're totally separated from servicing other farm equipment, perhaps.
Excuse me, Mr.
Chairman. That would be true in the case of animal husbandry or dairy products here. It does speak of management and sale of those products. If you get into the sale of agricultural products, as I read the bill and the amendments, such equipment would not be exempt.
Line 5 specifies tools.
That's what we were talking about.
Is that?
That's what you meant, Charlie.
I'm talking about tools and machinery used to service.
That's what we're talking about.
That's the nut of the whole problem here. To service equipment that delivers agricultural products. Now, where in the language we have before us would that be exempt?
I think it boils down, Mr. Chairman, that his truck would not be farm machinery, therefore would not be covered under the exemption of the equipment used to repair.
If he was hauling his hay to the market?
I don't think so.
Mr. Chairman, may I make another suggestion? However, those same tools, more than likely the same tools, are going to be used to service the equipment that you use to raise the hay.
Well, yeah, assuming that I don't have my hay raised.
True.
Yeah, you could have it custom.
Which I do.
Yeah.
I really hate to raise the question, but there it is. I'm going to quit right there.
Okay.
I'm not sure that
that
we need to try to dot every I.
Well, we're going to do this right, and we're not going to do it in the next 7 minutes, because I thought we would have it fairly well concisely drawn.
Mr. Chairman,
so,
I apologize.
No, that's fine.
My concern was, when I saw the amendments, what I'm trying to get at is get this put to bed once and for all.
I
want to, and if Senator Hanlon has an idea, I must tell you, I see no reason why farm equipment, that type of thing, the servicing, what have you. I want the door closed so that they can't go out and say, oh, well, we didn't get the water well, or we didn't get the tool that repairs the so-and-so, you know. I've just had it. If it's exempt, it's exempt.
Well, for the sake of the assessors involved, we owe it to them, too, to be clear.
Yeah.
And we're going to be so.
Mr. Chairman, since we're talking about what is essentially a shift in who pays property taxes, I'd like to get some idea from maybe the assessors the more limited amendment, which was the first one, which exempts most of what we had now been exempting and explains it adequately so that everybody knows what it is, and then the more expanded version. I'd like to know how much the more expanded version
is. That's fair enough.
Well, what we're really trying to do, we're dealing with one or two counties in the state.
Is that all?
Other counties, this is going to shift. The shift's going to be insignificant because we're dealing with one or two problems around the state. And again, it should be clear, and that's why we're going to take some more time to make sure we have it.
I apologize, Ken, for not getting my name on it. Okay. The mayor was even here because I wasn't aware.
So let's make sure we get it back together and work with the assessors and trying to make it.
In Marion, Benton County, and through Huron, even Linn County, I'm damn sure they don't go in and assess the heister in the nut dryer or the seed cleaner. I'm just almost certain, if I were to check, that they haven't gone that far, but I would like to see if that happens.
Hope County, they do.
Okay. Chairman,
yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, I understand. I understand. We'll meet tomorrow at 1:30.
John, I really